new set means new tech.
New studio, so many cameras, so many lights are on me right now. Squinting just a little bit, but it's awesome. It's
for that
amazing.
Beautiful glow, like all for that. Show-worthy.
it's the bright lights of Broadway here at the Marketing Blender Show.
That's right, exactly. And we are super excited. Samaria is joining us. Samaria Boyd is our social media expert, and she is going to be tuning in with us because since we are doing live, this is live Q&A day, so you guys get to tell us what you want us to talk about. So I love thinking on my feet, but I'm not going to lie, I'm a little butterflies in the stomach right now. Like, okay, am I caffeinated enough? Am I ready?
I think you're caffeinated enough. I think we're going to be okay.
Some of you guys might not realize that this is actually a new version of the Marketing Blender Show, which is primarily on YouTube, but also across all of the podcast platforms. We launched it about 7 months ago, and it's growing. We crossed 100,000 downloads just on YouTube, or views, what, a couple months ago? So it's really performing. We're quite proud. But now we're being put on the spot, because it's one thing when you get to practice your content. It's another thing when you just get to wait to see what people want to surprise you with.
All right. Fantastic. So I know that yesterday I was actually talking with someone in my network and she submitted a question. So okay. I'm going to go ahead and start with that one. This question is from Robin Schaffer, who is an analyst relations expert. And she was asking the question. Oh, absolutely. She wanted to know, she works with a lot of startups, and they all seem to want to target the CEO. Mm. They're all like, oh, our decision maker is the CEO or the business owner, so that's the person that we want to talk to. Unfortunately, a lot of the time, the problem they're solving is something that's downstream from the CEO.
Oh.
There's an internal user, someone in the organization they're actually solving the problem for that is not that final decision maker who signs the checks.
Yeah.
And so she's seeing an issue with all these organizations that just want to target the CEO, but they have trouble differentiating and having their message heard, because it's at that level, it's a pretty high level conversation with the CEO. And if you're not solving a CEO level problem with your solution, what do you even say? And this is actually something I see a lot with sales-led organizations. They want to have that shortest path to closing the deal possible. So sometimes they actually ignore the internal champions and they just want to have those CEO to CEO conversations, don't want to talk to anybody else. But first of all, you have to be solving a problem that's big enough to be worth solving. It has to be solved for someone who has influence in the organization, and it has to be solved for someone who cares about solving the problem. So it doesn't have to be someone who has the final authority to say yes or no, but it has to be someone who can actually influence. So a lot of the times when we're working with B2B companies that have that internal champion, that person, maybe they're two or three steps down from the CEO who's actually having the problem, who's actually suffering with it and needs to have it solved, they need to have help with selling up the food chain.
Yes.
That means your messaging, your marketing messaging, should absolutely be focused first and foremost on that key buyer persona who's the internal champion, because they're the one that you have to get your foot in the door with. You're the one whose attention you have to grab. They're the one you have to persuade to have an initial conversation. But then you need to be providing them with tools to sell to the buyer committee, which is usually CEO, CFO. There may be one or two other key decision makers or blockers in the technology space. There's usually an IT manager, yeah, a sniper of some kind. So they're going to be actually very happy to give that information to the person who's able to say yes on a monetary level if you give them the cheat sheet. So your buyer persona should include that full buyer committee. But I completely agree with Robin that there's an issue with thinking that you're always selling to the CEO.
Yes.
If you're not solving the CEO's problems and there's not a way to frame your messaging to make it clear what problem you are solving for a CEO, don't go that route. Go the route of influencing the champion who's going to take you into the final decision making.
Absolutely. I mean, it's why we follow the processes we do, right? So first things first, of course, who are your buyer personas? Sometimes it is a CEO and insert the title of the advocate. But those are different messaging pathways because the pain flows through the organization differently. And sometimes the advocate is don't get me fired, right? Or sometimes the buyer persona relationship between one or the other is that this person, the advocate, really does have decision-making power. The CEO only gives a signature, and they trust that person, so they don't really care. So if that person says yes and says, hey, boss, I need a signature on this, they get it. So really understanding what those roles and relationships probably look like, and then you're exactly right, arming each person. But that's about sales mapping and buyer journey mapping and saying, well, how does each person go about their decision making? What do they need to feel confident to bring it to committee or to sell it up in the organization or to confidently own the decision that they're going to be held accountable for? And it is amazing how much tribal knowledge is in your sales team and is out there. And people will tell you, I find buyers, if you ask them, especially if you decide to go on a fact-finding mission, they will tell you how they want to make purchases and what they're thinking. And then you can start to identify trends across buying environments and then build a frictionless or as close as near frictionless selling process for them, because that's what they need to move forward. So I think that's such a great point. It's just, you've got to understand the environment and then realize every time you have a buyer persona, that's a different messaging strategy and a different marketing plan and a different set of resources and approach. It's not the same thing just as because it's the same company.
And I will say one more thing, if especially in tech sales, if your salespeople want to have conversations at the CEO level, but they're really supposed to be starting with the champion.
Yeah.
Having a social CEO, so having the CEO of your organization be the one who's out there in the public eye, connecting on, for example, LinkedIn with other CEOs that you would like to sell to, that's going to work a lot better than the salesperson trying to knock on the door of a CEO who doesn't necessarily see them as an equal.
And it ensures that there's no wasting of time, because you're not going to plug in your CEO in an inappropriate situation, just like that CEO that you're selling to, what has to be very vigilant about their time as well. So I think that's so cool.
Absolutely.
I love it. All right. Samaria, Charlie, do we got you online?
We're perfect.
I love it. Good. So exciting. Okay. Any questions rolling in?
All righty. Not yet in the comments, but we do have another question from Benny, who asks, where should I start with using AI for my marketing?
Ooh,
I guess we knew the AI questions were coming.
Definitely. Well, I like this question. I mean, we've been doing AI for years, four. We've been
in the AI game
for a long time. Yeah, since they really started coming out. So, okay, I'm going to let you do the where do you start, because you work with a lot of small businesses, have led our small business program. So I want to start with, if you're the doer, where do the doers, you know, how do they best use AI in marketing? And then we'll start rolling it back to bigger processes.
Sure. So I'm going to start with content marketing, because that's where I cut my teeth. Mm-hmm. I would say that when you're looking at AI, don't think it's going to do everything for you. Ask it to find things for you.
Yeah.
And to help you with ideation. We found using these tools that AI can find data, it can find sources, it can help create outlines, help you structure things faster. It's not very good at writing long form content.
No.
You typically have to rewrite 80 to 90% of anything that ChatGPT spits out.
Voice and tone takes a while to train.
It does. And frankly, even once they get the tone right, it sounds repetitive.
Yeah.
Once you start digging in, there's a lot of fluff. There's not a lot of actual information, and there is not originality.
Yes.
I will say AI in its current iteration, as it's being used, all it can do is regurgitate what's already out there.
Yeah.
So don't expect it to do something other than regurgitate what's already out there.
It can't think for you.
It can't.
That's right.
It doesn't do that. So if you're using AI for helping you with your content marketing strategy, it should be helping you uncover opportunities and ideas. So learning how to write really good ChatGPT prompts to help you frame how you're going to talk about things, especially doing competitor research. You can ask AI, what is the most frequently talked about thing on my competitor's website? Put in the URL. You know, what's the thing that they talk about the most? What is their top performing content? You can find all kinds of information quick with just that query-based language in ChatGPT that helps you understand what other people are being successful with. You need to take a look at that create something unique from it. Don't just, again, regurgitate what everybody else is saying. Add your own expertise. Come up with your own perspective, a contrarian opinion to yes. popular stuff out there. Yes. Hey, ChatGPT is not going to come up with that.
Yes. And I find it's horrible to look at a blank page. But man, give me something I disagree with or that I think is bland and let's go. I just got so efficient because I didn't have to start at zero. So I agree. I mean, there's been times where I just need a little kachuga, like let's go. Like what's my thinking on this? And I'll just want to hear as quickly as possible, what are people saying about this topic? And very quickly, I'm like, oh, absolutely not. That is shallow. That's garbage. Yes. And it's just a great place to start in order to, you know, the other place for me, once we're moving past content, I mean, SEO. So we should say that there's some healthy applications for making SEO more efficient. If you have a great strategy and great research behind the decisions. And so there's really great tools out there for that. But then if we're going beyond the content marketing world, I'm always saying, let's look for the places where your efficiency is just getting bogged down. So it's efficiency number one, and then low value type of things, right? So if it's a task, so thinking, right? Thought leadership, high value. You cannot abdicate responsibility to ChatGPT to think for you. However, if it is low value tasks that are bogging you down, man, this is where it can get really, really special. And so it can show up in so many different places, from processes to efficiencies to automations to even, you know, some of creative work, as long as it's low down on the chain where that detail does not matter in regards to the value you're bringing to your customer or to your team members.
Exactly. I would not recommend having AI create a logo for your business.
No, thank
However,
you.
However, creating slides that are going to go on a social media post. Yeah. I use AI tools to make my design stuff suck less.
Yes.
Because I'm not a designer.
Not a designer.
I could spend 2 hours in Canva and come up with something that looks like garbage still. AI can at least make stuff look professional, have the right brand colors on it. And if the point of it is not selling design services, it really doesn't need to do more than be in alignment with the brand guidelines that you can feed into the system.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just think that there's a lot of stewardship that has to go around it, no matter how you're using it. And, you know, we're constantly testing all the things. We recently tested voiceover. That's been really interesting. We saw some really good, some really bad. We tested video last year. It was not there.
It was creepy.
So we are still real. We are not machine learning AR generated. Sorry. That is still real. That is not augmented reality. But, you know, we're constantly trying to stay ahead on what's happening in the marketing world. And of course, we know some people. I'm not a developer, but they're fixing bugs and they're speeding up their code development with it. But they say the same thing. It can't think for you. But how does it augment, you know, what you're capable of creating? Because we are still creators and we want to be. We shouldn't want to get out of owning the voice that we have in the world and owning our authentic addition to what's already been created right there, because it's just regurgitating for now. So we want to keep contributing.
It is.
Yep.
I'm sure we'll have more AI questions later.
I know. Exactly.
Later in the live.
Exactly. All right. What do we got next?
All righty. So over on Facebook, the question is, I know I need to do more video for marketing. What are some ways that I can make this easier? And that's from Nimesh.
Oh, okay. I'm just going to say start now, start. Stop making excuses. Stop saying I don't know how to do this, because you have a phone, a really amazing phone on your camera. So we need to start. So I think so many people get overwhelmed with, this is going to be so time consuming that they just don't ever put it out there. So that's where I'm going to start, is do something, do anything. We do a ton of videos. So, all right, what's your next tip?
Always start with answering questions. One of the things that I find for people who are not comfortable with or familiar with public speaking is they will freeze. They will have sweat running down their face. They'll have a heart attack over trying to say scripted words. They can literally be reading off a teleprompter and they will forget how to speak their native language. However, if you are just answering a question that someone's asking you as if it was a natural conversation, most people actually do fine. They don't need to have a script. They just need to have a couple of bullet points that they're going to cover. And that's the kind of content that people love to consume. They like to hear opinions. They like to hear advice. They like helpful tips. It doesn't have to be professionally produced. You don't have to have your own studio. Please do make sure you're not shooting outside in a windy environment, because nobody likes to hear while they're trying to listen to your video. But don't overthink, is this the most beautifully produced piece of content ever? You are not, you know, beach body, look at my luxury lifestyle. If you're in B2B especially, people want to understand how they can make progress toward their goals. If you're helping them with that, you're the friendly face that they're going to trust.
Totally agree. You know, I was writing down a few others. I think what you said about the technical is so great. I mean, figure it out once and then be done. Record your videos there every time. Ask the question about the microphone and buy it and set it up and test it. But figure out your system. Buy the little tripod, buy the big tripod. But it doesn't have to be expensive, but set up your system one time, get good enough quality that makes you look professional, and then allow your content to shine. So I think that's huge, because we will overthink that all the time. Also, make a list, because if you're like me, your best ideas are gonna come from driving in the car, being in the shower, having a glass of wine and talking to my husband. Not great times for filming video, but it is a great time to create a little note in your phone and be like, oh, I wanna talk about this. This is interesting. And then steal like an artist. I love that book by Austin Kleon. Watch the good ones out there. Watch the people in your industry. Daisy earlier mentioned having a contrarian opinion. Watch what they're doing. Be inspired. Think, oh, they're in a different industry. Can I take that approach that they're using or that trend? Man, watch what Samaria is doing on our clients' social feeds, and then be inspired by what they're doing and what's working, and then say, wow, can that specific approach work for me? And then bulk create content. I'm sure you guys will not be surprised to hear that we do not just record one episode at a time. We don't even bother to change our shirts back-to-back episodes anymore. And that creates tons of shorts, tons of repurposed content, and it's all good. So you don't have to do long-form content like we do. We prefer this conversational style, but if you, in your note, have 25 different topics, set it up and hit start and play or record one of those words. Gotta love live. Can't edit this out. But hit record 25 times. There's 25 videos. Guess what? Your first three might stink. You've still got 22 left. You're way ahead of the curb. So don't overthink it. Really launch. Overdo what you think, but just start getting it out there, because after that first time, you never have to have a first time again, right? So you'll just keep getting better, better, and better. So
also consider how many different places you're going to be using video. So people tend to pigeonhole video as a social media theme, or it just goes on YouTube. No. Video should be something that you can use on your website. Every blog that has a keyword that a video could help boost your SEO rankings for, make a video
Amen,
about it.
Amen, sister.
It can literally be 90 seconds long. Put it on YouTube. Make sure it has the same keyword as the one you're trying to rank for. Put it on your website. Make sure you're including video as an option in your emails. Landing pages always perform better with video on them. So don't just think of video as being a social content strategy. Think of video everywhere. And it might be that that's the thing that helps you get started, is thinking, hey, this is not going on social where everybody sees it. It's just going in an email campaign that's going to people who are already in my customer list. They're probably going to be okay with it.
Yeah. And social media posts, they have the lifespan of a housefly. It's okay. Get it out there. Move on. Create another one and just keep going.
All right.
I love it.
All righty. This question came from, I think, a speaking engagement. It's from Bill. A little long. Gotta do the build up. So I started an HVAC company last year, and it's just me for now. I want to learn more about how to grow my business with online marketing. So far, he says he has a website, business cards, and a Google profile set up. And he's wondering about the Google Guarantee program. I posted on Nextdoor, which landed me a few jobs and referrals. I have a Yelp profile, and I've done some door knockers, but I'm not paying for any of that. So how does he get more business? He'd like to have multiple jobs per day and get busy enough to hire another tech.
Oh, this is so good. This one, I can feel it in my chest, because he's a bold, brand new business owner. I just want
so much to make sure that he does not make bad decisions. Yes. Like I could feel like it rising in me, like, oh gosh, don't be taken advantage of. Yep. So first of all, I want to say, bravo, Bill, that you have done a lot of building blocks. I mean, I heard a website, I heard a Google My Business, I heard Yelp, I mean, I heard Door Knocker. So you're putting a lot of different things out there. So bravo that you are putting marketing first. So that's the good news. I would say the bad news is HVAC in local services in general can be highly competitive and they can really be dominated by the big guys. And so you've got to be really, really careful at not believing any agency or any group of people saying, oh, this always works. Because when you have a high competition landscape, things have a tendency to be more expensive in the online. Now, the good news is, so we're doing good news, bad news, good news. The good news, though, is that you can win. David can beat Goliath. And so, Daisy, when you hear about this kind of situation, where do you go? What are some of the fundamentals where he can find wins or where he needs to really start thinking, how does he get business early? And then how can he build on from that?
I would say it really comes down to, are you using the digital landscape to grow your circle of influence? So are you leveraging social media to connect with other service companies or other businesses that are touching the target market that you want to reach? Are you going to market with co-promotions, co-offers? Are you becoming known in your local community by the people that everybody turns to for, hey, do you know a guy who does dot, dot, dot?
Yes.
So thinking about growing those little circles of influence rather than going, hey, I'm going to be, in our case, DFW. We're going to be the HVAC people that everybody knows in DFW. Nope, you're not. That's not what you need to be in order to hit the goals of be busy enough to hire your next person. You just need to make sure that you are becoming embedded with people who are most likely to refer you to others. I would like to talk a little bit about the Google Guarantee Program.
Good.
Very new.
Yeah.
So Google, those folks are geniuses, man. Angie's List is going to be obsolete in probably the next 12 months because Angie's List likes to believe that everybody wants that high no-like trust factor based on other people just like them. No, we just want to know we can get our money back if we're not happy. So Google's nailed it in terms of their guarantee that if you work with a local service company that's under their certification program, that's basically covered by their insurance, that if you have a dispute, you're going to have it settled by someone other than, you know, Billy Joe in the back office who may not answer the phone when you have a complaint. So it's a very interesting model.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, I don't think a lot of consumers know what the Google Guarantee is.
I agree.
So there's going to be a learning curve for that actually to mean anything. I think it's definitely going to catch on better than Better Business Bureau, which is, you know, a ranking system a lot of local businesses use, but it really doesn't mean much to anyone. And it doesn't give consumers any kind of recourse.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see, you know, there's always that cycle, the hype cycle, and then things tail off. There's going to probably be a window of opportunity where having that certification does mean something. So being an early adopter of it, so you can capture that early opportunity where people are making that a decision criteria for who they do business with.
And where Google's prioritizing it.
Yep. And Google search is rewarding you. Yep. And giving you the best placement. I don't know how long that honeymoon is going to last. It could be these days, it could be 6 months.
I know.
Or it could be a few years. So if you're looking to grow aggressively and you want to play in the digital landscape, definitely something to look at. It doesn't sound like, from what I've read so far, it's going to be super expensive. But I would say don't put all your eggs in that basket, because I guarantee you all of your competitors are eventually going to catch on. And every time everyone else in your competitive landscape starts doing the same thing that you are, you lose the edge that you had.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think being an early adopter, so important. Is it a guarantee that it will get you business? No. Can it give you a leg up if you're doing other things well? Definitely. So Google My Business, a lot of times people think their Google profile, they set it up and then they're done. It should be treated like a social media platform. So consistency and constantly updating, I think, is a really important thing. Potentially asking the right questions and seeing if he can win at local SEO. That's a specific approach, right? So it just depends on how much money he has to spend. But there's, you know, get educated about SEO. Yes, you probably need somebody else to do it, but man, you cannot afford not to know
how it works, why it works, what questions you can ask to hold people accountable, and how to keep going. And I love what you were saying about circle of influence, right? So, man, what neighborhoods are you there? You know, can you shrink it down and go small in order to play big in that environment? So I agree. Don't just try to blanket, for instance, here, all of Dallas-Fort Worth. You can't win that. But you might be able to win a very small area where referrals and good reviews and reputation start to build one after the other. And then I would say just know who you're uniquely served to serve. There we go. And create some good messaging. Like Seth Godin has a great book, an old one called Purple Cow. And just because if you saw a purple cow, you'd be like, what the heck? You pay attention to that. So especially if you're a David versus a Goliath, find your purple cow. Like, be cool. Like, play it up a little bit so that you get faster recognition.
Be cool, really, for the HVAC company.
Yes.
Yes, I would say.
I'm so petty.
Figure out the thing about the experience that you can make different.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that makes you remarkable, the thing that makes people remark about you to others, it makes you memorable. And it's always going to be in the HVAC industry, there's going to be a strong referral piece of it, because recurring business is going to be next time my air conditioner goes out, hopefully not for another decade and a half at least. So you do need to be cultivating that. So creating an exceptional customer experience, not just good enough to get you a good review on Google, but enough that people are like, oh my gosh, you won't believe when these folks came out and they worked on my air conditioning, I learned things I didn't know before. They made sure that this was right. It told me about an issue I wasn't even aware of. So, you know, creating that remarkable customer experience is going to be something that helps you compete against the big players.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to say this for everybody. I want to say, make sure that when you are exploring digital marketing, you are asking yourself and whoever is trying to sell you services, can I win here? Because there are very clear and specific answers in Google, in SEO, in social media, and any paid campaigns about whether or not you can afford to play there, and you can afford to pay there, and whether or not you will win there. So, yeah. Okay. Do we have time for one more?
Yep. Alrighty. So the other one is also one from a speaking engagement from Juan. I went out on my own a year and a half ago. I do custom software and integrations for large companies. I have one large client, which is great, but how do I go about landing 2 to 3 more clients?
Oh, okay, software queen, you get to go first.
All right, so this, I actually talk with people in the consulting space very frequently who are in this situation. So when somebody tells me, you know, they're a business owner, they're out on their own as a solopreneur, and they have one client, at that stage, they're actually a permalancer. Nothing wrong with that, but that is not a business yet. You just are a freelancer who has one client, and you're very, very right to be looking at, where do I get my next 2 or 3 clients? Because having all your eggs in one basket is not a comfortable feeling. No matter how much that client loves you and appreciates you, you don't have control over what's happening with their budget, what's happening with the health of their company, how long they're going to need you on the project. So bravo for taking a look forward into that. So often when I'm talking with technology consultants, and honestly, custom software and integration is an extremely, extremely competitive space. There is a shop on every corner
where
people do this. Differentiation is very, very challenging. So as you're looking at how you're serving your current client, you're going to need to identify something that you're doing uniquely well for them, or some area of specialization that you're hitting for them, that you can go out and identify other clients who have that specific issue. This might be industry-based. Often it's not industry-based. It might be having to do with a specific technology platform. It might have to do with regulations that are changing so that all of a sudden other businesses now have to meet a certain standard with the technology, and that might be what you're in is. But you need to identify what that replicable thing is with your current client that you can communicate to your next 2 or 3 or 4 clients about. And then you need to figure out, how do I know who in my market is having that specific issue that I uniquely solve? Or who can I leverage in my network for the right types of introductions so that I'm having conversations faster to figure out, you know, is this a unique differentiator that's actually important to additional businesses, or do I need to shift how I'm talking about what I'm doing? So there's no fast answer for this, but I will say that it's usually a blend of online research, including SEO research. So figuring out on the SEO side, not just, you know, custom software integration or custom software near me, but very specific technology focused questions that people are asking that you can use to identify where's the interest. You may not have the budget to run any kind of digital campaign toward that, but it does let you know what you should be pushing out on social media to get attention around the specialization that you have. And then you're going to be needing to use your networking capabilities. If you have the ability to do any kind of public speaking about the area that you specialize in, that is the very fastest way to land additional clients. It's the shortest road to revenue, and it's the thing that builds trust and authority faster.
Agreed. That specialization component, I really love to see people niche down around this, because one of the things that I've experienced is when you've got a custom software developer, their imaginations are way too big. And it's because they can build so many different things. And so I want them to see, oh, this is the most common problem out there. And it shows up in a lot of places where then the language is very specific. It's extremely nuanced, and especially if you can really nail a very specific industry, a very specific title, a very specific even type of integration, like very common platforms where you solve a known issue that no one else is really attracting. Oh, such a much faster side door or entry point, because that specificity helps people to say, yes, I have a problem. It's causing a lot of issues or a lot of money or a lot of inefficiencies for us. I can handle saying yes to a project. And then you can expand once you're in a sizable opportunity, which sounds like he probably has since he's been doing this for a while. So that's one of the things that I love. And then it also account-based marketing, which exactly plays into what you were saying, is one of the really big ones. Like anytime I hear somebody only needs 2 or 3 or even 5 or 7 clients to make or break their success in the next 12 to 24 years, that is sales and marketing alignment right there. And so it is exactly like Daisy was mentioning. Is it the networking? Is it a couple trade shows? Do you have a combination of an email series? But it's really nailing down, who are the 20, 30 companies that you would be amazing at serving? List them. Get on social media. Connect with the decision makers that can say yes, and orchestrate an outreach program that is so specialized to them and how you can serve them, and look to build relationships with those people, because that's really easily transferable. And you mentioned, who refers to them? You can get inside of those circles of influence, which you mentioned earlier on another question. You can get inside of that and become a go-to and become somebody who has the know, like, trust factor really quickly. And you can do it intentionally. It doesn't require serendipity here.
And I want to give one more tip on this. If you're a solopreneur and you're in the custom software integration space, you have the ability to leverage your position as a subcontractor with other firms. So if you can figure out how to get your foot in the door with an enterprise company by subcontracting a specific piece of a larger project, that's a really good way to build portfolio and to grow the kind of connections that you're going to need. And also find ways to de-risk people using your services, because some of the reasons people choose not to work with solopreneurs is that what happens if this gets partway done and I can't get in touch with you anymore, et cetera, et cetera. So figuring out phased offers that give them a way to try and buy. Don't do free work, please. But figuring out a way to scope your offerings and your projects so that people can give you something to solve quickly and easily and prove yourself is going to be an easier lift than coming in as a solopreneur and trying to land another really large project by yourself.
Agreed. Low risk, high value, get paid for it. Heck yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, how are we doing on time, Samaria?
You're doing great.
Do we have any more questions, or how are we doing?
We have plenty of questions. Do you guys want another one, or are we ready to wrap?
Yes. I know. Let's keep rolling.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So from Alyssa over on Facebook, my competitor is running ads that show up on the top of my organic search results. What can I do about this?
Okay. So there are several reasons that this could be happening. And depending on how it's happening and why it's happening, there are different things that you can do. So if in your competitor's ads, they are using your trademarked business name, you can file a complaint with Google and Google will shut that down pretty fast. So that other companies are not allowed to go online and impersonate you and try to steal your brand name traffic and direct it to their ads. There are some gray areas here where, for example, if they were running an ad that said their product versus your product, they might be able to get away with it. But usually Google is enforcing very strictly trademark laws, so you can have that kind of content taken down. Another reason that competitors might be showing up on top of your brand name organic search results is if they are bidding on your brand name but not using your name in their ad copy.
Because so, it's a smart strategy.
Yeah,
it is. I hate to say it.
It's a smart strategy. If you're not doing this with your competitors and you can afford to, you probably should, because it's perfectly legal to do that. They know that your visitors are looking for something like your solution and they're like it. So they're going to do it. Not a whole lot you can do about that, except you can bid on your own brand name. A lot of companies that I talk to balk at this. They're like, I shouldn't have to bid on my own brand name. But why not? Number one, it's your brand name. You want your own ads showing up above your organic search results rather than your competitors' ads, because some ads are going to go there. Might as well be yours. It's also going to cost you a lot less to compete for that space than it will cost your competitors. Your competitors would have to way outspend you to get that top spot. Guess what? You're able to use your brand name. They're not able to use your brand name. So Google is going to give your ads preferred placement for a lot less money. So you might as well put a little bit of money toward bidding on your own brand name so you show up there. Another reason that competitor ads might be showing up is that they're just focusing on keywords that are related to the types of services and products that you provide. Again, you should be looking at your competitors' ad strategies, and you can literally see all of this information. This is not hidden or private. You can use tools like SEMrush or other tools to find out exactly what your competitors are doing, what keywords they're using, what they're bidding on, so that you can develop your own ad strategy based on where it's worthwhile to spend your money.
Oh my gosh, I agree on all of that. So good. Looking at your competitors' ad strategy, huge, right? Because they're actually giving you a nod that you're a player in that space. So this is a really awesome opportunity to take a look at your positioning and where do you fit and how can you really leverage and amplify your position and your perceived reputation in the market, because there might be places where you can go bigger. You know, you're the originator or you're the one or you're the something, right? There's a reason that other people are anchoring to that. So that's important. Also, beware of you wanting to chase down that competitor. Stay focused on your business, where you need to be, what your ad strategy is, and what this tells you about being successful. So I get really nervous about people getting competitor-centered. So it doesn't sound like she is. I think she's asking a great question, but just because your competitor is doing it or saying or doing something that makes you angry does not necessarily mean it deserves any of your attention. You should look, you should consider strategically, what does this say about my opportunities, and then go back to your messaging and your point of view. And then always sharpen the message. You know, you said there's so many tools to kind of get an idea of what's working. And so pay attention to your competitors around what is working, what do I want to accomplish here? Is there an idea that now they have created an environment where I can see what's going on, that I, you know, there are some interesting opportunities for us to play upon in our positioning? I mean, I think there's a lot there, but bravo for being the one that people are gunning after. I think that's really exciting. And if you're not bidding on your competitors' names and they are the big guys, you should be. So that's for everybody else.
For sure.
All right. Well, it's looking like this may be the last question that we have. But remember, if you guys have any more questions or you want to connect with Daisy, just shoot them an invite on LinkedIn. And I'm sure they'd be happy to answer any of your questions. So the last one, going back to AI, from Matt, it seems like everyone is using AI and it's hard to break through the noise and really connect with humans these days. How can I get out there and be heard if there's so much clutter?
Oh, so many opportunities. So I'm going to sound like the broken record on this one, and I don't care, because this is step number one. Know who your humans are.
first of all. So what they care about, what they think about, go where they go. Because if you're thinking about your target market as a real human being, bots can't compete with that. They can create noise, to your point, in volume. But you can say, man, where are some of those peripheral areas that they pay attention to, or what, how do they view value, or maybe what is the type of research, who refers them? There's so many places that you can use strategic creativity around where to go to find them, or even what to say. But it is really about being human-centered and other-centered and making sure that you know what drives value. The other thing is that your authenticity and your specialization and focus on them, you will not sound like a bot if you are doing this well. So I think this is one of my biggest like ahas, and ahas for our clients a lot of times, is sometimes you don't have to compete at the volume. You can simply be a bigger version of yourself and it will resonate so deeply. But being follow worthy or being just high value oriented, not using AI to rinse and repeat and add noise. I mean, you really can stand out so well. And I think actually it creates a huge opportunities for people being intentional and really, really clear about what they do and why they exist.
I would say from a content marketing standpoint, doing things that are authentic is incredibly important. So having your little phone set up and making your videos where it's just you talking directly to the camera, but speaking the truth and connecting emotionally with your target market, AI has not gotten very good at faking that. Honestly, it does, because it's not human and it doesn't understand what it's like to be on the other side of the table from a real person and to be listened to and to be heard. I would say also that be as different as you can, because again, AI is just do the same set of messages being amplified over and over and over again. So the more different you are, the more bold you are in your difference, the more you're going to stand out. And the final thing is make sure that you are inviting engagement. Mm-hmm. So it's not about just saying words at people. It's about understanding more and more what they care about, what they feel. So make more of your content be about showcasing the people around you and sharing that spotlight and making it very clear that they as human beings matter.
You know, I love that because it brings to mind a couple examples. So, but first I want to say there's certain things AI cannot do. They cannot do speaking engagements. So if you have the kind of business where you can get out there, they cannot build relationship for you. So if you have any type of environment where you can be relational or referral-based, where you can scratch someone else's back, do co-promotions, anything where there's a human element to it, AI cannot do that, right? And just relationships and building community. We have an episode coming up with Samaria, and she talks a lot about social media and community building, and AI cannot do that. I mean, the first message might sound like a real person, but really quickly, everybody sniffs that out. So I think you're exactly right. And brings me to the examples. So it is not, I mean, I don't even know what our average email open rate is across all of our clients, but I'm super confident to say it's likely higher than 35% on the low end. We have some email campaigns that are higher than 70%, 70% open rates. And it's because it's good content. It's because we know, and that client knows so much about who they're talking to that of course they're opening it. AI cannot do that. So that's an example that cutting through the noise through your authenticity and your value add is so doable and it's appreciated. And then the other one is I met a guy who started freeze-dried dog food. And on social media, what blew them up with this product was for 30 days, he ate the dog food because he was saying it's safe and it passed all these compliance issues. AI cannot eat your dog food. Like, it will not come up with the things that make you so likable. And so just sink into who you are. And it does not matter if you're an extrovert versus an introvert, a creative versus a serious. There's places for all of that in this world. And simply going deeper in who you are, AI cannot replace your humanity. And guess what? While we all like its efficiency, we don't want it to replace you. And nobody else does either. So Gosh, I'm so glad to end on a soapbox. It's like my favorite thing. Thanks, Samaria.
No problem. Fantastic.
All right. Any final encouragements or thoughts that any of these questions brought up for you?
I think it's really encouraging to see people thinking the right way about the problems that they're trying to solve.
Yeah.
And it's okay to start wherever you are with marketing, testing and trying. And it's absolutely the best idea to ask questions early and often so that you can learn from other people's mistakes instead of from your own.
Yeah. The quality of your questions determines the quality of your output. So you guys, thank you so much for this. We will see you. We're going to be doing lives, I think, every month, correct? Is that our schedule?
I guess so. Let's do it
now.
All right. So I know we do have a couple coming up with guest stars, guest hosts as well. So be looking for that. Samaria mentioned it earlier. Send us your questions. You can email them to us. You can chat them to us, or you can join live and obviously post them in the comments. We love doing this. We appreciate you guys so much. And if you like the new set and you like the new format, we got more surprises coming. So can't wait to share that with you guys. Onward and upward.